In today's episode, we are going to discuss Robert Cialdini's new seventh principle of influence. So you probably know Robert Cialdini as the author of Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion, one of the most popular business books, marketing books, influence sales books out there of all time. I recently saw an article in Psychology Today from Dr. Robert Cialdini, and it promised a new seventh principle of social influence. And, you know, he's widely considered a top expert. So of course I had to pay attention. And As you're going to hear in today's episode, as soon as I started reading his article, I completely agreed. And hold on to your hats, because I think we're going to go deep today. These are the proven direct response marketing, copywriting, and entrepreneurship success strategies you can use today to write your own ticket and create the life you want. I am Roy Furr, and this is Breakthrough Marketing Secrets. Now, here's today's breakthrough. Okay, to get started, I just quickly want to recap the six principles from Cialdini's book, Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion. And I have it right here. You're probably familiar with it. You've probably seen that before. If not, on your own bookshelf, on the Amazon bestseller lists. So the six principles in that book are, number one, reciprocity. And this is really common, really well known. When someone does something nice for us, we feel the need to repay the favor. So for example, one way that this is used in marketing is when a nonprofit, a fundraiser, sends you like a bunch of address labels or some free gift or whatever. In the direct mail piece itself, we feel a need to reciprocate. We feel a need to donate, at least to make up for their expense in sending us this nice thing, right? Next up is commitment and consistency. So we have a need as human beings to be seen as consistent and to follow the commitments that we've made. So once we say we're doing something, it increases our likelihood of actually doing that thing because we want to live up to our commitments. Social proof. This has become really popular. Like this kind of became the core of Jeff Walker's teaching in the product launch formula, that initially one of the major things that he's doing with all of his educational content around the product launch is to create a whole bunch of social proof, create a whole bunch of engagement where people are getting excited for what it is that you're doing. And by creating all that social proof, the goal is to get to get people to see other people engaging so that it creates more of a need to be part of it yourself, right? Authority. We trust figures who have authority, who have social status, who have political status, who have economic status. Anybody that we see as an authority, so this can be everything from they're wearing the uniform, they have the badge, right? To any other kind of status symbols. Honestly, you know, if somebody's dressed in a nice suit, oftentimes we will treat them differently than someone who is dressed in rags, right? Because we feel like they have some additional authority. Now, the person in the suit could be a scumbag, and the person in rags could be Jesus or Gandhi, or, you know, it could be some incredible human being. But because one person has authority versus another, we tend to trust that person who has those external markers of authority. Liking. We are easily persuaded by people that we like. We are much more likely to do something for someone or because someone asks if we just like them. Like if our impression of them is, hey, I like this person, you know, I could have a beer with them, right? That's the saying about politicians. You know, maybe the whole reason you vote for a politician is because you feel like you could have a beer with them, right? If we like someone, we're more likely to be persuaded by them. Scarcity. When something is less available, we want it more. Now that's played up a lot in marketing. And for good reason, because it works. We talk about limited quantities, we talk about limited time, we talk about any kind of limitations on an offer in order to create this feeling of supply-demand imbalance, where the supply is less than the demand for it, and that the word for that is scarcity. So those are the six principles out of Influence, the Psychology of Persuasion. So what did Cialdini say in this article in Psychology Today is the seventh principle. Unity. The word is unity. We favor people from our own in-group. We favor people who are in our group, who we see as like us, belong to the same group as us, versus people who are not. And whether you like it or not, whether you think that this is morally or ethically right or not, the truth is that's how we as humans behave. And my own perspective on this is this comes from tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of years of evolution. Actually, probably it goes way back to before we were even human beings. You see this in wolf packs. You see this in other mammals. You see this in other animal behavior, that animals treat members of their small group differently than they treat members of the bigger group. And it is, so this is a tendency. And even in today's society, where a lot of people try to be impartial on all sorts of factors, the data, like when you actually measure the behavior, it actually shows that people still have this bias. And I have a feeling some people are going to hate me for this, but I'm just repeating data that Cialdini has called out, and this is the truth. So hate the truth. So they looked at sports behaviors, and officials in sports are trained to be non-biased. They're trained to not show biased behavior for their own teams, for their own, you know, teams from their own country, or you know, people of their own race. And yet, three different data points here that he quoted: in international soccer or football matches, referees, their calls swing by about 10% based on their home country team. So these are the best football/soccer refs in the world, and they are trained to be non-biased to their own countries. And yet still, when analyzed, their behavior shows a 10% preference for their own team, or their own country's team, versus other countries' teams. In Major League Baseball, umpires actually call more strikes if the pitcher is the same race, has the same skin color as them. And so they favor the pitcher. They give the pitcher better calls if that pitcher is the same race as them. In NBA, officials in basketball, they're showing the same racial bias, to the point that researchers said that basically the racial makeup of a team and the referees can influence the game's outcome. And so it's not just in sports. Isaac Asimov has had a great quote that Cialdini shared: all things being equal, you root for your own sex, your own culture, your own locality, and what you want to prove is that you're better than the other person. Whomever you root for represents you, and when he or she wins, you win. And so we feel like we belong with this other person, like we are in unity with this other person. And so we want to see them win because it represents a win for ourselves. And actually, a different piece of research that wasn't quoted there is that it's kind of funny. Testosterone levels in men, in sports fans, male sports fans, have been measured throughout the course of a game where they're rooting for one of the teams. And when their team wins, the testosterone level is going up and up and up through the game as the end is approaching. And if their team wins, that testosterone level remains elevated for hours after the game. And if the team loses, the testosterone level craters at the end of the game. It just completely falls. And what that is it's like this association, this feeling of like, my team won, so I won. And I've even seen this behavior where when the team that you're rooting for wins, you're like, we won, we're awesome, right? And then when the team that you're rooting for loses, you're like, oh, they lost it. So even there, it's like associating versus dissociating, being in unity versus not in unity, based on the outcome of the game, because it makes you feel better about yourself to be united with the winner and dissociated from the loser. And this, you know, this topic cannot be discussed, this whole unity idea cannot be discussed without getting into politics. And I don't want to wade too deep into this, but he did cite some really interesting research that both has everything and nothing to do with politics. And I'm just going to read a straight quote out of this article here. He said, "People not only favor members of their political parties, but also believe them more, even under bewildering circumstances. In an online study, participants were shown some physical shapes, and asked to categorize them according to a set of guidelines. The more shapes they categorized correctly, the more money they would win. When deciding how to best classify a shape, participants could choose to learn what another participant, whose political preferences they knew from previous information, had answered." So they knew, oh, this other person is either like in my political party, has unity politically with me, or doesn't. And I can figure out how they categorize the shapes. And back to the quote, "To a significant degree, they elected to use the answer of a politically like-minded participant, even when the individual had been performing poorly on the task." So when somebody was in their same political party, they used that person's answer, regardless if that person had been shown to be good at this task or not. So Cialdini says, think of it. People were more willing to employ the judgment of a political ally on a task, no matter that, one, the task was irrelevant to politics, two, the ally was inferior at the task, and three, they would probably lose money. These findings fit well with scholarship indicating that political party adherents base many of their decisions less on ideology than on loyalty, born of feelings of unity. So, yeah, this is it's everywhere, and it actually causes us to act in completely irrational ways. And, you know, that's part of the interesting thing about this book, Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion, is that it was initially not written for business people or persuaders. It was actually initially written for consumers and for people who would be the targets of persuasion, to learn about how persuasion is used so that you can become more, you can become less susceptible to persuasion in a way that takes advantage of you. It then became so popular with business, with marketing, with selling. And by the way, I completely agree with that goal from Cialdini. It became more popular for business marketing and selling. And what Cialdini has decided to do is pivot, and he does speak to businesses, but he speaks to them about how to do this in an ethical way. And so, like any other principle of persuasion, this creates this moral and ethical quandary, because ultimately we are always trying to persuade people. Whether we claim to not like it or claim to like it, even the act of being anti-persuasion is, in a sense, often trying to be very persuasive. So I am with Cialdini's most recent positioning that the goal is to be persuasive and to use these principles in moral and ethical ways for the betterment of everybody, for, you know, where it's a win for me, win for you, win for the world. And the reality is with this unity thing, and you can probably think of examples, I'm not going to cite them, taken to extremes, you can use unity as a principle of influence to justify very terrible behavior. I mean, it's true. Like, in-group versus out-group, it's incredibly powerful, and it has been used many, many times over throughout all of human history to justify terrible behavior. And nobody is exempt from this. It's like a fundamental way that our social minds work as human beings, is we look for how people are like us and not like us, and we make snap judgments based on whether we feel like we're in unity with them or not. And like, if you want to grow your sense of how people are like you, I will note that there's a really interesting institute that's based at UC Berkeley called the Othering and Belonging Institute, and what they're focused on is identifying where people are creating this break of identities, turning people into others, versus how we can create shared identities, finding inclusive identities. So, example, we may have different skin color, but we may both be parents or direct response marketers or fans of similar music or whatever. Like, we're all also human beings having human experiences, and we're all going through life and sharing journeys together, sharing experiences together. We're all here now in this moment. And there are a lot of things that we are in unity about, even if we come from completely different backgrounds and we have different cultural identities and all of that, right? The thing is, in marketing, this is super effective. And, you know, while Cialdini has just recently called this his seventh principle, marketers have known about this for a very, very long time. And honestly, like, I've used it too. So, for example, a few years back, I was talking to a client of mine, and I realized, and this is somebody who's in the survivalist space, and most of that is a very conservative audience. And I realized that he had a picture with President Reagan. And this is like, and he even had a letter, like a signed letter from President Reagan thanking him for his help on a particular like community issue, right? And he wasn't using this. And for a conservative audience, this is like second only to having a picture with Jesus. I'm sorry, like it's a little bit over the top, but not really that much. And I said, why aren't you using this? So we actually stuck it on the front page of a sales letter that I did for him. And it was absolutely huge. It was absolutely huge to have a picture with him and President Reagan on the front page of his sales letter. So that's an example. Like, if you have something where you are clearly shown as being a part of a group, an identity that your prospects share, it's a huge opportunity for you. And you can do that. Like, when I did that, I didn't do it in a way that was excluding anybody, but I did it in a way that was including people and showing people who were interested in President Reagan that, yeah, this guy has this background. And then there's testimonial pictures. One thing that I have given feedback to clients on quite often is if your testimonial picture does not look like your core audience, it may actually not be helping you as much as you think it does. And I hate this. Like, I hate that we make these judgments. But the reality is that we make these judgments all the time. And so it may help to feature testimonial pictures that look more like your core audience. Or, for example, Perry Marshall. He, for a long time, he was still really focused on his Google AdWords and focused on his kind of internet marketing identity. And he was doing a lot of stuff there and like business identity. But then one day and I've done copy reviews for Perry Marshall all the way back since like 2014. Then one day I'm reading a piece of copy and he's not sure about including this whole section that is about that's about. An experience that he had where basically a woman walked up to him out of nowhere and said, basically told him she had a message from God for him. And it significantly, like that experience, like he didn't know this woman at all, but her message was like a perfect fit to his situation. And since then he's told the story thousands of times. And even before that, he was telling the story. But I read it and it was completely buried in the sales letter. And I said, Perry, like, this stuff, you know, it's weird. It's out there to the majority of people, especially people who are in like this hyperlogical space that you're in of pay-per-click advertising. But with that noted, this is something that's really unique and interesting and will really attract a certain core audience to you. And you should not lean away from this identity. You should lean into this identity. You should like embrace this identity. You should speak from this identity, and you should like make a big deal out of this, and you should use this in your marketing. And he has since then, and he does it in a way that is pretty thoughtful. He actually has a way that every time he sends out one of these messages, you can click a link and say, hey, I'm not interested in any messages like this. But by doing that, by allowing people to opt out of that type of message, it also allows him to really lean into that message for the people who are interested. And he has added different components very similar to this throughout a lot of his work, and he just speaks about this stuff more. And for the people that resonate with him, it is a big thing. It's a big thing. And so how can you find connections, find shared identities, find unity with people? How can you find belonging with people who are in your market? And it doesn't have to be based on the biological things like race and sex and whatever. Yes, there is a place for like men's groups, women's groups. There's a place for people who share a cultural identity. And those are not the only ways that you can be in unity with somebody. We have all sorts of identities where many of us are on the same journeys together. We have the same interests. We have other identities that are the same. And the last thing that I want to share, like in this regard, is I want to share a lesson that I got from Dan Kennedy. And he was talking about how in his speeches that he would give in front of rooms of thousands of people, he would tell certain stories. And so, for example, he is well known as stuttering when he was young. And so he would tell a story where he mentioned stuttering. He would tell a story where he mentioned very briefly alcoholism. He would tell a story where he mentioned being on the edge of bankruptcy as an entrepreneur. Actually, I think he maybe went through bankruptcy. It's not my story. I don't remember exactly. But he would have stories that he told that only briefly mentioned these individual items. And what he knew would happen was a concept, I called it here, there's one in every room. Meaning, in every room, there was at least one person who either stuttered, when they were young, still stuttered as an adult, or maybe had a kid with stuttering issues. With the alcoholism and the bankruptcy, actually in a room full of entrepreneurs, typically that tends to be a much higher, it's more than one in every room. But what would happen is there was at least one person at the end of that speech that would come up to him, and there's the crowd that surrounds him at the end of the speech, and you know, he's talking to all of them, and this person would always wait off to the side. And then at the very end, when the crowd had started to clear, that person would come up and they would tell their own story. Their own story with stuttering, their own story with alcoholism, their own story with whatever it is, right? And so he told these stories knowing that even if all his other marketing and business advice was right and was valuable, that somebody could be completely on the fence about being interested in it. But as soon as they heard that stuttering story, and they had their own stuttering story, or alcoholism story, and they had their own alcoholism story, or bankruptcy story, and they had their own bankruptcy story, they immediately had this sense of unity, of shared identity. And it was not all of the other marketing and business stuff that made them buy. It was this unity, the shared identity. And so since then, I have told lots of different parts of my own story. And admittedly, there are other parts of my story that I haven't told yet. But things like dealing with ADHD, dealing with actually becoming addicted to ADHD medicine and getting pretty sick because of it. Becoming a parent. I occasionally talk about parenting. Kettlebell. I've had people come to me and do marketing coaching consulting with me because I do kettlebell and because I follow Strong First and Pavel Tatsuin and his kettlebell stuff. Neville Goddard, manifestation, feeling is the secret. I've had people interested because I've talked about that. Meditation, mindfulness. Even actually this picture on my wall that's based on it's based on a Buddhist teaching. I've had people come to me because they are because they've seen that picture and connected with me based on that picture on my wall. Electronic music. I've talked about my history as a DJ and producing music. Hockey, my call center job, being a failed writer, like my first financial success as a writer when my grandma bought 10 copies of my self-published poetry book, and I was actually able to break even on self-publishing that book. So all of these stories that I tell, there are different ways where your journey and my journey might be aligned or not, and it's fine. And if we're not aligned on one particular element of that journey, of course, like that's something that you'll almost not notice. It's just Roy told another story. But if we are aligned on that particular thing, it may be something where you do suddenly feel in unity with me. You do suddenly feel what Cialdini has described as pulling us together, making me more persuasive without trying to be like a hard closer or anything like that, by just establishing these shared identities. And the more that we can use things like this in our marketing, where we're just able to recognize, like, hey, I've been through some of the same things that you've been through, the more the other parts of our message can shine in terms of their importance, because there's this foundation of unity. And I do have to say, like, one thing that I meant to put in my notes here that I didn't yet is that Robert Diltz actually teaches these logical levels of change and how you can change people on these different levels. And almost the highest possible level that is the hardest to change, but that also represents the thing that so many changes pivot on is identity. And so if you can, for example, instead of saying, I want to work out, I want to do this behavior called working out, and I want to do this behavior called working out X number of days a week. Instead of that, or I want to lose weight or whatever, if you are able to shift your identity to, I am a healthy person who takes care of their body through regular exercise and giving myself appropriate nutrition. And because I am a healthy person who takes care of their health, I'm able to easily maintain a healthy weight for my body. And that type of identity-based statement can be far more powerful than any type of external behaviors that you try to impose on yourself. Okay, so that's a lot. I'm looking at my timing, and this has gone almost 30 minutes. This is a pretty epic episode of Breakthrough Marketing Secrets. I would love it. Well, okay, so if you want to go deeper, how do you go deeper? Well, one of the major ways that we do express this unity, this shared identity, is through stories. And I actually have a training called the Story Selling Masterclass, and it's all about how to use stories in selling. And one of the major pillars of story selling that I teach is character or identity. Like, and it is, how do we use stories to build a character that our prospect resonates with for the purpose of getting a selling outcome? And how do we use it all inside that selling message? And so the Story Selling Masterclass goes deep into that. And it's very powerful training in that regard. Now, I'll include a link in the description to that. It's part of the BTMS Insiders training library. It's like Netflix for copywriting and marketing training. You sign up for one low monthly fee, you get access to everything, and the Story Selling Masterclass is in there, and it's just part of over 100 hours of training. I'll also include links in the description to the Cialdini article at Psychology Today and his influence book on Amazon. So let me know with this episode. Leave a rating, review, comment, whatever, on a scale of 1 to 10. Let me know how valuable you're finding this and why. What are your action items? What are your takeaways? How are you going to use this going forward? Also, tap that like button before you go so you get more content like this delivered to you. And so the magical algorithms of the internet know to share it with more people like you who will find it valuable. You can certainly share it with folks directly and subscribe before you go. Subscribe here. You can also go to BreakthroughMarketingSecrets.com. Sign up to get my daily emails Monday through Friday, including notice when these episodes are going live, as well as more exclusive content for email subscribers. Again, my name is Roy Furr. This has been your daily episode of Breakthrough Marketing Secrets. I always aim for a 10 out of 10 value. I hope that I've delivered it here, and I look forward to seeing you again in the next episode. See you soon. Bye. Thank you once again for tuning in to this daily episode of Breakthrough Marketing Secrets. Remember, check out the links with this episode for even more value. Now make sure you like, comment, share, subscribe, and engage in every way you can to keep this show going and growing and delivering daily value to you. I'll catch you soon for your next big breakthrough.